Welcome to a podcast of the Mike Novak Show. Don't forget that you can listen to Mike live on Sundays from 8 to 10 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
I'm Mike Novak, and I approve this message. Hi, my name is Mike Novak, and I know I'm a big, big-time radio star in Chicago, but you know what? I'm running for office. Yeah, dude. Not just any office, but a very, very, very special office. I'm running for Lieutenant Governor of the state of Illinois. Now, if you've been listening to commercials running all over the place, including this very radio station, you know that Lieutenant Governors spend most of their days learning French and swatting spiders on the wall. Well, French is cool, but swatting spiders isn't. 'Cause spiders are cool, too. And I'll bet that most of you don't know what the lieutenant governor does. Well, he or she, but we don't really let she's be governor or lieutenant governor or even lieutenant governor in Illinois. Anyway, this person's job is to sit around and wait for the governor to be indicted and either sent to prison or be impeached. Cool. So what happens then? Well, the lieutenant governor becomes governor. But since that person is going to be immediately attacked and either indicted for something or other or lose in the primary, there needs to be a lieutenant governor to lead the state. Get it? So, that's what I'm running for. So, I hope you'll vote for me so that when everybody else gets thrown in the slammer, I'm the guy in charge. And I approve this message. Wait, I already said that. Awesome. I said it twice.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in demand.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers. And by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. And by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes since 1997. Podcasts of this program, along with green tips, valuable links, and DeMaio weather, are a click away at MikeNovak.net. That's MikeNovak.net. If you can't find him on Facebook, it's because he's got a paper bag over his head. Here he is, Mike Novak.
What I'm wondering is whether, you know, can you have a radio show and, like, do your own political ad? I think I violated about 17 laws right there.
Maybe one or two, but...
If it's only a couple.
Yeah, I think you're okay.
And I would eventually get thrown in the slammer anyway,
right,
myself.
If you're going to be a politician in Illinois, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You just... You know, one more thing, Beth Botts, before you, I just realized that when you run for politician in Illinois, you have to, it's de rigueur to have your own orange jumpsuit ready at all times.
I don't know if you can coif the hair enough to do, like, you know, the Blago thing there?
I could.
Like,
I can grow it out.
Impenetrable dome.
I still have hair, so
yeah,
that's,
see?
I can do it. Yes, Beth Botts.
I voted early.
Good
and
woman.
One of the great joys of voting early is that for like a week, I haven't had to pay attention to any political advertising. I've been able to throw out, without even glancing at them, all the postcards that come in my mailbox from judge candidates. I've been liberated. I've been free because I voted early.
You know, I didn't vote early. And one of the reasons I didn't vote early is because I know that nobody's going to be at the polls on Tuesday. It's going to be a breeze. I'm going to be in and out really quick. But in terms of all that stuff you talk about, I figure, okay, here's a message to politicians. I assume not necessarily that you're lying, when you send me, when I listen to a commercial and I get the stuff in the mail, and by the way, I look to see if it's four color glossy, and I go, wow, there's a waste of materials and natural resources. But not, I assume that you're stretching the truth, you're pandering, you're making stuff up about your opponent or stretching the truth there, and that none of that counts. So when I hear a radio ad or see a TV ad, all it reminds me is that, oh, gee, I have to go and do my real research on this candidate.
Right.
I can't trust this. And this is everybody. Even the people I'm likely to vote for, I go, I don't believe you when you say that. And I'll bet that 80% of people are like me out there. Maybe more. That doesn't mean that they're not influenced by these ads, but I think people are smarter than that, and they look at the ads and they go, oh, please just shut up.
Right, because it's marketing. The question is, where do you go to get unbiased information, the straight dope? Because a lot of people don't know.
It's easier in the days of the Internet. You know, I was able to print out a sample ballot, and then I was able to go to you know, two or three newspapers and several bar associations and find out the recommendations about the judges It took me like 40, half an hour, 40 minutes to mark up my sample ballot. And then I just went into the Oak Park Village Hall, voted, was gone. It was great.
You know, with the Internet, you can actually do your work. Sometimes it takes a little more than that. With the judges, I do what you do.
Yeah.
Is I go to the various bar associations and you line them all up and you say, okay, which of them are approved and which of them say, you know, very few judges get a no vote from their bar association, qualified.
Well, some of them do, actually.
I know.
A bunch of them do.
But much fewer than get qualified or highly qualified or whatever their particular. You got to go to the bar. For the judges, you have to go to the bar association. I refuse to vote. If I get into the booth and I realize I haven't done my homework on it, I'm not going to vote.
I'm the same way. I'm not going to punch. I'll leave a blanket.
But I like to go in fully armed, like Beth, with everything. Now, the other ones, you got to look around sometimes. You know, it depends who you trust. And if you trust the Tribune, go to the Tribune and see some articles on them. And not necessarily just their recommendations, but interviews. If you trust the Sun-Times, if you trust the Reader, if you trust the IVI, IPO, it's whatever, whoever you trust. You know, one thing I like about the Reader is they do a lot of in-depth reporting on races that a lot of people skip.
Right.
And you can go there right now and go to Clout City, and Mick Dumke and Ben Jarofsky have done a lot of good reporting on various candidates. And they don't actually...
they don't make endorsements.
They don't make endorsements. So that's some of what we're doing. That woman sitting across from me is Beth Botts, who is from the Trib these days.
Well, formerly from the Trib, and still do a little freelance garden writing for the Trib.
And does her own garden writing at her very own blog.
I have a story in the Tribune today, in fact.
Do you really?
I do.
It's about?
It's about garden clubs and why you should join a garden club.
Well, I'll tell you one reason. I'll tell you one reason why you should join a garden club, because they'll hire me to come and speak.
Well, that's or me.
Or you, too.
Or me. You know,
they'll hire both of us, and we'll make money. And that's the only way we can make money in this business anymore, is speaking at garden clubs. Because as we will talk in a little bit, things are a little gloomy in the horticultural world. Yeah. And, you know, everywhere. The economy, it hasn't bounced back. Unemployment continues to go up in the country. I mean, there's a lag. I don't care what the banks say. I hate the banks anyway. And I'm all for move your money to the local bank. I'm all for that thing. It's like, I'm done with big banks and big insurance companies. It's like, screw them. Screw them. You know,
can you
whatever
say
happens
screw
to,
on the radio,
yes, you
Mike?
Can.
Yes, you,
yes,
I,
you can.
That I can say. And I say, move your money to a little bank. I've got my money in a neighborhood bank. I love my neighborhood bank. No reason big banks should have our money anymore, because they don't know what to do with it. And so all you bankers listening, hey, what can I tell you? It's Sunday morning and I'm cranky.
Well, they're here to try to learn how to grow a money tree anyway.
Hey, I like that.
I like that one.
Where's the bell here? Okay.
Heather's awake today. Woo!
All right. Well, we got some people calling in.
Yes, we do.
Right at the get-go here. You might want to grab that other one. And let's go to line one and talk to Corla. Hold on. Let's see. Corla, are you there?
I am here.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Can I ask why you might be calling the radio show?
Because I heard of an opportunity to say Happy National Seed Swap Day and get 2 tickets for the auto show.
Wow.
And because I wanted to have a heart attack.
Because
fear.
Why are you having a heart attack?
Oh,
too much coffee?
Out of fear.
Out of fear of talking to me.
Yeah.
Oh, we lost our second caller because
tell Perry to call back.
Perry, you call back, buddy. Don't drop off the line now, Perry. Now, Corla.
Yes.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You don't.
No, I have no idea. None at all. So.
You, sir.
What?
Jake said.
Jake who?
I don't know his last name.
Hartford.
Hartford? That's not his real name. Come on.
That's not his real name?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. Not even close.
Are the tickets real, though?
Yes.
The tickets are real from what I understand. I see nobody sends me memos or anything. I just, you know, I walk in on a bright Sunday morning and, people calling and saying...
I jumped online and got in touch with Jake's producer, and he said it was an honest...
Mistake?
No. It was a cross promotion for National Seed Exchange Day and the Mike Novak Show, and gave them a chance to give away
some tickets.
I didn't
get my official WCPT memo on this.
No, I didn't either. It was more like guerrilla warfare radio.
And the gorilla, the 500-pound gorilla on Saturday morning is the guy behind it, right?
Yes.
Okay. Corla, here's what I'm going to do for you. Okay, so you said happy...
National?
Seed Exchange Day.
Yes.
And the problem is it was yesterday.
Okay.
But don't let that stop you from exchanging seeds with your neighbors and, getting rid of all that accumulation of seeds from years before so you can order some new seeds this spring and boost the gardening business.
All right.
Well, Corla, you're not having a heart attack, are you?
No, not really.
See, you're relaxing into it. It's easy. Hang on a second. I want to bring somebody else on the line here, and that would be Gabrielle.
Yes, how are you?
Whoa, your line's really loud. Okay. How are you doing this morning?
Fine.
And why are you calling?
National Seed Swap Day.
National Seed
Swap Day. Where's my auto ticket? They told me to say this yesterday.
Okay, National Seed Exchange. It's not Seed Swap, Seed Exchange.
Yes.
If you're going to do the contest, Gabrielle, you got to get it right, you know.
I think you can go either way. I saw both online.
Oh, really?
They call it Seed Exchange or Seed Swap. It just depends on where you live in the country.
Ah, okay. Well, then I guess you pass.
So she gets tickets, too.
Hey, Perry, if you call back, buddy, I'm going to give you tickets, too. See, this is the way this little punk works, is that I'm not giving them just to the first caller. I'm giving you two.
First call in the fifth of all the calls in the first 15 minutes.
Yeah, all the calls. So since it's 8:16... you guys are all getting tickets to
everybody.
The auto show. And if you have any problem with that, you talk to me, okay? I hope that's Perry. You got to check to see if that's Perry, because he's the only other one who qualifies. Corla, you're getting tickets, and Gabrielle, you're getting tickets. Hold on a second. I think Perry's here. Perry, you on the line, buddy?
Yes.
So, and what do you say?
Well, that's what I was calling in for, to wish you a happy National Seed Exchange Day. But Jake Hartford did say happy National Seed Swap Day.
See,
so I'm gonna have to say to Jake what you said earlier about screw him.
No, I did not say that about Jake.
Not about Jake, but if he can't get things right, I'm gonna have to tell him to screw him.
No, I was talking to the bankers of America, but. The big bankers, not the little bankers. This will serve nicely to screw Mr. Hartford, actually, to give away tickets to all three of you. So Corla, Perry, and Gabrielle, you're all going to the auto show. I don't care how they come up with the tickets, whether they have to, go out on the street and say, need two. If they have to do that here, that's fine with me. So, you guys hang on. I'm going to make sure that Heather gets all of your... do you have all the information
no,
from
I have
them?
To talk to them?
All right. So Heather's going to talk to you. You get your information. And are you guys... I hope all of you are going to exchange seeds either today or later in the week. Anybody? No?
I don't know about exchanging seeds, but I might deposit a few seeds.
Okay, Perry, I got to let you go here. You talk to...
Heather,
who happens to be my assistant, I'll just put him on hold. Corla, you still there?
Yes, I am.
You are very nice and polite, as you are, Gabrielle. Barry's a little out there. So,
yes.
Is that typical of the Jake Hartford audience?
I wouldn't know.
Okay. Well, listen, both of you, Gabrielle and Corla, thank you for calling. I'm going to put you on hold. You talk to Heather, and you guys are going to the auto show.
Oh, thank you for the
great.
Visit,
all right. Take
thank
care
you.
Now. Have a great Sunday.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
Bye-bye. Oh, I think she was going to say happy seat exchange day or something like that. Are you having trouble with those headsets there, Beth?
Yeah.
That's not good. Well, we'll work on that, too. It's a Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM, WCPT. We're at 8:20 a.m. You know, I think that might be a little loud. But
no, it's unloud.
It's unloud. Okay, we need to get Heather to get you a little more volume. I tell you what, Heather, before you get their addresses and stuff, can you help Ms. Botts here? And we're going to be talking about a lot of different things today. Seed starting is actually one of them, so
yeah.
It's good that they're talking about National Seed Exchange Day, and I want to thank Jake for letting me know that yesterday was it.
It went right by me, too,
yeah.
And I'm
yeah,
sorry,
you missed
it was
some
a great
else.
Opportunity.
And the state of the business, because we just had the big winter show in Chicago called Mid-Am.
Yeah, the Mid-America Horticultural Trade Show was at McCormick Place, and I was there. And, you know, it was small, and people were sort of reeling from 2009, which was a really bad year for, you know, nurseries and growers and landscapers and all those folks. And some of them were trying hard to be optimistic about 2010. I believe the buzzword that's going around is cautiously optimistic. But it's definitely, you know, the state of the economy is being reflected in the garden business, too.
Well, yeah, I think it's like a lot of different businesses. You can just look at what do people do with their lives? You happen to be a grower or work in a garden center or something, and I know you hear it, and I hear the same thing. Wow, business is off. It's tough. And if I hear that, I figure it's reflected throughout the economy.
It's reflected throughout the economy. I mean, there are some bright spots. The big bright spot in the gardening business is, of course, vegetable gardening. Big increases in the number of seeds sold, big increases in the number of people who've taken up vegetable gardening or are trying vegetable gardening. Probably a lot of those people will be seed starting for the first time this spring. They may have started with plants last year, and this year they're going to be starting seeds.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the things we're going to be doing on my show in 2010... I said last year, during 29, I said it was the year of the homegrown vegetable, but I think
really
this year, I think we're going to do the year of the homegrown vegetable redux.
Yeah.
Because if you thought last year was big in terms of urban agriculture, this year's going to be huge.
Yeah. And I think there are a lot of people who – I did a talk at Cantini a couple weeks ago about – the title of the talk is Vegetables Anywhere – and about all the different places. You can find a place no matter where you are. If you're in an apartment, I live in an apartment, no matter where you are, you can find a place for a container of herbs. You can find a place for a pot of greens. You can tuck vegetables into your life somehow. And even if you have a very small urban yard, you can do raised beds where you can grow vegetables pretty intensively. There are a lot of methods for finding a place to grow some food, even if you don't have the classic big yard where you know and the tiller with the long rows and the bean teepees. There are
the bean teepees.
You know those.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah,
those are fun.
It was fun. The bamboo stake, and then you run the strings from the top of it.
But that is an important way to garden.
It is an important way to garden.
Vertical gardening.
To go vertical, and that was one of the big things that I saw at Mid-Am this year. Is that there's a lot of emphasis on vertical gardening. The big big buzz last year was the book Living Walls.
Well, last year at the Flower Show, that was one of the best exhibits when the Wicker Park Garden Club
did a living wall. But it's even ever so much more so. And I've heard some stuff. I haven't really been able to confirm it. But I think that there's going to be along Michigan Avenue this year, there's going to be, you know how they always do the fancy planted beds and they always do something different in the Michigan Avenue beds?
Right.
I think that this year along Michigan Avenue, it's going to have something to do with vertical gardening and living walls.
Hmm.
So, but the details on that aren't firmed up yet. But there was a lot of stuff at Mid-Am for ways to build retaining walls that actually have plants planted in them instead of just being a blank wall, and the planting pockets that you can hang up on the side of a wall or the side of a building and create little soil pockets. The problem with that in Chicago is, of course, it's really hard to overwinter something like that. It's pretty much of an annual proposition.
Yeah.
Because the roots of those plants are not going to make it through the winter, so it's not a good idea to be planting perennial plants in those situations in Chicago. But
and that's another thing we're going to talk about when Rick DeMille gets here in a few minutes, overwintering when you lose your snowpack.
Yeah.
Which just changes the equation completely.
Changes the equation completely. I would like to talk about mulch. I have some things to say about mulch.
Welcome to Sunday morning, folks. This is the Mulch Hour on WCPT. Well, and I always think, when do we get to the point where we geek out too much? But you know what? Mulch is if you're a gardener.
Mulch is just fundamental to being a Chicago gardener.
Yeah.
You got to think about mulch.
And it's fundamental to being an environmentalist.
It is fundamental to being an environmentalist, and it is fundamental to being a gardener, but you know what? There's mulch and there's mulch.
Dun, dun, dun.
Wow. Can I write that down?
I was out at Cantini. I was out at Cantini,
And do you say Cantini? Some people say Cantigny.
Well, they say Cantini.
I know.
Because it's supposed to be like this French village.
But I thought it was Italian.
No, it's French.
Are you sure?
It's some obscure little village in France where Colonel Robert R. McCormick saw his only real action in World War I.
Colonel Mustard with the lead pipe.
Now that's geeky.
Yeah.
So Roy Diblick was there. You know Roy Diblick. He's given his talk, and one of the things he's talking about is the evils of bark mulch. All this bark mulch that has become the standard, it's just the standard expectation. Everybody expects bark mulch. It's just a tidy yard is spread with bark mulch. And he's standing there. He's the great perennial guy from Northwind Farms up in southern Wisconsin. And he says, there is no plant on earth that evolved to live in wood chips. And he said it again at Mid-Am.
That's been his mantra now for several years. It's in his book, The No Maintenance Approach, and I've had him on the show, and he said it here, and I say, Roy, we've been teaching people that mulch is a way to conserve moisture.
Well, it is a way to conserve
moisture. And to put organic material back into the soil, so how can you tell people that they shouldn't mulch? He said, well, you have to know when to mulch, and I say, Roy, that's the whole point.
No, the point is not that you don't mulch. The point is what you mulch with. You don't mulch your perennials with great big chunks of wood chips. Those are great around woody plants.
Uh-huh.
But actually, the best thing to mulch your perennials with, and it's absolutely free, is leaves and shredded leaves.
No. What you do is you bag them and you put them on the curb and then send them to the landfill.
They eventually get composted and spread on some farm somewhere.
Exactly.
And you probably, very often you may pay money to have somebody haul away the leaves. This is absurd, folks. Get yourself one of those leaf vacuum things with a shredder in it, shred your leaves, and use them for your mulch. It's the best thing for your perennials. It's fine to use the wood chips around woody plants. We had some tree trimming done at our place not so long ago. They left me a great big pile of wood chips, and I've spread them all around the trees and the shrubs. That's fine, but around your perennials, the best thing to use is leaf mulch, the leaves that fall off your trees.
But
it's free.
Not everybody has trees.
Not everybody has freeze, and that's
a
problem.
And not everybody sells leaf mulch. I mean, that is one of the things. You can't go to the Home Depot and get a bag of leaf mulch. Yes, Heather, her hand.
Can you go to the forest preserve and yank the leaves off the ground?
No, that would be wrong.
Okay.
Yes, that would be bad.
Wrong, and it would be illegal. But if you are forced to buy your mulch in a garden center, you know, buy the finest stuff you can get. Don't buy big chunks.
Right.
Buy
that's a good, really good point. Is that except for a tree, you know, around
except
a tree?
Except for a tree,
a
tree. Yeah.
And you should mulch your tree. Now, all right, we need to break, but hold on. Amtrak Tim has been patient, hanging on the line. How you doing, Amtrak Tim?
I'm doing great. It's been an awesome week.
And I know that. And as a matter of fact, I figured you would call because it's been such a good week. For rail travel in not only Illinois, but the country. Are you going to be around for a little bit? Because I need to get to Rick DeMaio, but I do want to talk about this.
Can I call you back in maybe like 20 minutes?
That sounds perfect.
Okay.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. That's Amtrak Tim. Yeah, if you've been paying attention, you'll see that rail travel has gotten $1 billion or so in Illinois, high-speed rail. Kind of like that. I think that's great. Of course, California got like $4 billion or something,
didn't they?
Yeah, but they're a bigger state. All right, we're going to take a short break. Rick DeMaio, weather coming up. Beth Botts is in studio today. We're talking about all kinds of things. I want you to call if you're listening to the show today, if you got any gardening questions. But also, I want to ask kind of an economic question, which is, what are you going to do this year? If you're listening to the show, and sometimes you hire a landscaper or you buy stuff for your yard. With the economy the way it is, what do you see yourself doing? A, still hiring a landscaper to work for you. B, you're going to do it yourself and buy whatever you need at your local garden center or box store. Or C, you're just going to let it ride for a year because you don't have the money and you don't have the energy and you're too busy trying to put food on the table. Or maybe D, are you going to grow food instead of flowers this year? Maybe that's the fourth option. I'd love to hear from folks who are kind of trying to figure out what they're going to do this year. And maybe Beth and I can help you figure out what direction you want to go. That's why we're here, you know. It's a kind of stump the hacks here on gardening hacks, you know, but we're good gardening hacks on Chicago's. What's the matter? What?
No, you guys aren't gardening hacks. I'm the one that kills houseplants, not you two.
Oh, no. And you know what? I was going to bring plants for both of you today. And I left them at home because
I want to save the lobby plant. It's fighting so hard to live. And
we got to repot it.
Can we get those plants out of the women's john?
That's the ones I speak of. I put them in the window. And
one of them
is so upset because it's got sunshine now, but it still has horrid soil.
Yeah, we need to
replace it. And I try to water it. So half of it is yellow and very pathetic looking, but green shoots keep trying to survive coming out the other side.
So she's taking care of it the best she can.
I want to save it. It's not my mission to save it.
We will help you save this plant, Heather.
I will bring it in. I'll go get it right now.
Oh, dear. All right. The plant saving show is on the air. But if you've got an opinion about or a question about what you're going to do in your own yard this year, 773-838-9278, and we'll chat with you. We've got a lot we're going to talk about, and we will be right back.
DR Services Unlimited has been providing Chicago's North Shore with award-winning remodeling and design-build services since 1991, giving their clients top-quality service and real value. They're on the cutting edge of green building technology, helping clients make their home more energy efficient without sacrificing beauty or function. If you want to make your home more energy efficient, simply want to add a room or renovate, call DR Services at 847-998-1687 or visit them at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Are you familiar with Aldo Leopold? Well, I know you are, Beth Botts, because you read about these kinds of things.
Yes.
The father of wildlife ecology, renowned scientist, scholar, teacher, philosopher, writer. It's his book, Sand County Almanac, that Leopold is known best for. Well, WRD Environmental would like you to remember something that Aldo Leopold wrote. He said the outstanding scientific discovery of the 20th century is not television or radio, but rather the complexity of the land organism. Only those who know the most about it can appreciate how little we know about it. The last word in ignorance is the man who says of an animal or plant, what good is it? If the land mechanism as a whole is good, then every part is good, whether we understand it or not. If the biota in the course of eons has built something we like but do not understand, then who but a fool would discard seemingly useless parts? To keep every cog and wheel is the first precaution of intelligent tinkering. Now, don't you wish you had written that, Beth?
I do.
Me too. At WRD Environmental, they not only appreciate the complexity of our region's ecology, but they're dedicated to protecting, restoring, and healing it. WRD creates sustainable landscapes from large-scale master planning to community pocket parks. For innovative, sustainable landscape development, choose WRD Environmental, located at the Chicago Center for Green Technology and online at WRDEnvironmental.com. All right, I need to let's do this one. That would I need to bring up. Here we go. Let's start some music. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Let us go to which line? Line one? Okay. Line one is Rick DeMaio. How you doing, Rick?
I'm doing fine, Mike. How are you? It's sunny, sunny morning.
It's a beautiful morning.
Is it nice out? Yeah.
And you sent me a picture the other day, and I'm trying to figure out. I mean, it was beautiful.
Well,
I was wondering.
I needed the money.
So you needed the money, and so sure, of course I'll pay you for the picture. I was wondering if it was a particular weather phenomenon or just
ice.
It was what?
That was ice.
Oh.
Ice.
Well, he's right on Lake Michigan. Yeah,
okay, where was this ice, Rick?
Yeah.
Where?
That was right outside my window. On,
well, oh, I know that.
Yeah.
But I'm
Go on.
Well, I mean, is there any particular reason you were showing me a picture of ice? Because it is winter in Chicago, after all.
Well, it was the first time we've had that much shore ice along the lakefront all winter. And, in fact, all the ice last night began to get pushed away from the shoreline due to westerly winds. So that was the first time we actually had about, I'd say maybe 2, maybe 3 miles of pancake ice that was pushed up against the shoreline. And there were probably, from what I can tell, yesterday afternoon, maybe what I saw, 6, 7, maybe 8 people with tripods down at the lakefront taking pictures of it. And the interesting thing about this last night was my son and I were walking along the shoreline, and we were trying to see how much weight we could put on the pancake ice without obviously falling in. And, of course, we fell in just a little bit, but it wasn't too much, 6 inches, no big deal. But the coolest thing about this was there were a couple of, I'd say, maybe 2 ambulances and 3 large fire trucks that all of a sudden started to come down Sheridan Road. And the sirens were blaring, blah, 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 you know, really loud sound. And all of a sudden we noticed that the ice, this is really cool, the ice started to, I think, feel the sound waves of the siren because it's such a high-pitched sound. And before you know it, there was this, like, crinkling and crackling sound at a very, very high pitch that was being transformed, or transferred, rather, all the way through the ice. And we're standing there listening to this going, what is going on? And mind you, the wind was completely calm when we were out last night. So it wasn't like a wind flow. It was nothing moving. And my son says, what is that? I go, you tell me what you think it is. He goes, well, I think that the ice is so brittle, and the way it's laid upon each other, it's probably feeling the sound waves, these high-pitched sound waves, and it's actually able to take those sound waves and push it through the ice from one side to the other. And I said, yeah, you're exactly right. He goes, have you ever heard that before? I go, I've never heard that before. And it was really cool to kind of put nature from a standpoint of, you know, the lake and the ice together with human-induced sound, which can happen, obviously, from time to time. But the fact that you can observe that in a large metropolitan area was pretty impressive. It was kind of neat. It shows you the fact that when you have situations like this, I want to make sure that people realize that, you know, you don't run away from the lake in the wintertime. Sometimes on days like this, you head down to it and experience that sliver of Chicago wilderness that we, I think, probably sometimes take for granted, Mike. So that was kind of an interesting phenomenon that I experienced last night. I wanted to share that with you and your audience this morning.
You are not getting this kind of meteorology on any other radio station in town. I can guarantee it.
Or TV station.
Or TV.
Matter.
Well, that's because you've only got 30 seconds on TV. And it never occurred to me that you could have that kind
cool.
of phenomenon, sound phenomenon on the lake. Mm-hmm. And then isn't that the amazing thing about Lake Michigan? So many interesting things happen
right
at the shoreline. That you know, people in other parts of the country can't experience, and we can.
And I have two classes at Loyola. Both have 42 or 43 students, so it's a pretty full load. And I make sure that I get them to think about what they're seeing as they're walking through campus, or as they're sitting in the library up on the third and fourth floor, and they're looking out, and yesterday was the first time that the ice had been on this side of the lake to this degree, because we had two rather cold mornings and the wind had shifted from the west to the east, so it pushed everything on shore. And if you didn't, you know that that was going to happen, and you wake up Saturday morning, you go, oh my God, there's 3 miles of ice out there. And I knew this was going to happen because I saw it on the satellite, on the high resolution visible satellite the day before. So I sent out an email to all of them. I said, when you wake up Saturday morning, I want to make sure that you get up and you look out the window and you go, holy smoke, Rick was right. And sure enough, I sent out this email because I really wanted them to see the full moon Friday night, because Friday night and Saturday night, the moon was in a state called the perigee, which is the closest that the moon is to the Earth all season. I say all season, all year. So it appeared about 14 to 15% brighter and larger than it would normally do that. So I wanted them to be able to experience that and to see the ice. And sure enough, I got a whole bunch of emails coming back to me saying, oh my God, you are the weather god. How did you know that was going to happen? who predicts ice flow? Something like that. But you know what, Mike? This gets them to, this gets them to think about the next time they come to class, they're not going to sit there and just get a boring lecture. I want them to come to class thinking of a question that they have from what they observed the day before.
You want them to get up and freeze their little tushes off right at the lake shore. That's what you want to do.
Bottom line is I want them to come to class.
There you go. And that's, I believe it's called a wolf moon. Is it not?
You know what? I'm not too sure. I mean, I'm more familiar with the names of the moon when it comes through.
Check that out, Heather.
Like September, October, and November. But yeah, if it's a wolf moon, it's a wolf moon, I guess. Right?
That's what I saw the other day. Heather's going to check it out for us. Mm-hmm. I note that you know, even as you're talking about the ice mm-hmm. coming across, that's because of the cold weather that we've been having, and there's not been any snow. We lost our snowpack.
Right.
Now, a lot of folks in Chicago are going to say, oh, that's so nice. I'm not tripping as I step off the curb and there's no slush. And yet, Beth and I know that this is not a good thing for gardeners.
No, it's not a good thing. I mean, you want a little bit of snow on the ground. We're going to get a couple of inches of snow Monday night into Tuesday. And so far this month, we've only had 9 inches. And I mean, I've been looking back at some of the numbers. You know, the month of December actually ended up 1 degree below normal. The month of January is going to end up totally at normal. We're actually at 0.0 for the month. Last January we had 21 inches of snow. This January we've had 9 inches of snow, but we've also had a couple of rain events, so the ground is sufficiently moist.
But see, here's the thing, Rick. I'm not talking about moisture, because moisture is one thing. It's when you have your moisture, and what kind of moisture do you have? We had plenty of moisture But then we lost the snowpack when it melted, and the ground may be hydrated, but the problem is the plants are exposed now, especially in the freezing temperatures we've had. Beth, did you want to jump in?
You know, what most people don't understand is that snow is about 90% air. It's a lot like your attic insulation. It's great insulation for your plants, and it keeps your plants from being exposed to temperature fluctuations. Now, Rick, you can tell me, my impression of this winter is that we haven't had any of those big, freaky warm-up temperature fluctuations that are so hard on plants because they bring the plants out of dormancy and they expose them to the wicked cold world before the winter's really over. Am I right about that?
You're right. Matter of fact, I know we had one day very briefly where we touched 45 degrees a couple of days ago, but other than that, we have not been above 45 degrees since the third or the, I'm going to say the second day of December. We have not had a warm up at all this winter. The last two or three winters, we had a couple of days where we had upper 50s, you know, 60 degrees. And I remember there was one time, I think it was like late February, that things were like, you actually saw the grass going green in some areas, which is really weird.
Yeah, it really scrambles the brains of plants. I remember Januarys when I've been out there, and, you know, there are snowdrops blooming and crocuses trying to poke up their little green tips in January. And you look at those things and you say, you know, you poor diluted plant, because there's going to be, you know, that six-degree day.
There's going to be a reckoning later on is what's going to happen.
Well, you know, Beth, I was looking long term, because normally when the weather kind of calms down a little bit short term, I get a chance to kind of like reverberate my mind and revive my mind instead and look long term. And the reason why I do that is because when the weather is so active short term, you can only look at so much stuff. After a while, your brain just doesn't comprehend things. And I want to be able to kind of take a step back a little bit. And I did that, and literally out for the next month, I think we probably stay at or slightly above normal temperature-wise, and some of the long-range computer forecasts out to about 60 days kind of suggest the same thing. So I think from the standpoint of having any wild, wicked warm-ups, I don't think that's going to happen, primarily because while El Nino is still somewhat strong, it's kind of shifted more so to the western side of the Pacific Ocean. We're not getting the real big storms coming in directly off the Pacific, but yet you're still getting an influence that we are getting some deepening of low pressure generally across Mexico into Texas, which was pretty much the result of what happened this past week with all the ice and snow down there. As long as the storm track stays across the southern third of the United States, which it will, through February, which basically begins, you know, after midnight tonight, and into early March, I don't think you're going to see any of these rapid warm-ups, which is good. So from that standpoint, I don't think we're going to see the snowdrops or the crocuses come out by the end of February. We'll probably see for the month of February near normal temperatures, maybe 6 to 8 inches of snow. We've only had 9 inches of snow so far this January. We're not going to get any today, obviously. And this month, we've only had one day, excuse me, where the temperature's been below zero, whereas in January 2009, we had 8 days where the temperature was below zero. So last year was much, much colder, much snowier. But even though the ground is somewhat, I guess you want to say, bare from the snow actually melting recently, I don't think we're going to see any really pure, super-duper cold Arctic air. So I guess that's one good way of looking at it. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Well, if there's not going to be any snowpack, yeah, that's a good way, you know, and you're talking about we might get a couple of inches of snow on Tuesday. On Tuesday, I'm thinking that's sort of the minimum. You know, I'd rather have like 4 or 5 inches of snow, but if we don't, if we can at least get a couple, you okay there, Beth? You need to sneeze?
No, that's all right. I've recovered from the urge. But, yeah, I mean, even a couple of inches of snow is helpful, because the snow not only insulates, it also sort of reflects the sunlight away because it's white. And so it really – the snow does a lot to protect the ground. But if we're going to have pretty stable temperatures – then we may get away with not having the snow cover for the next, you know, 6 weeks.
Right. Because I remember that there were a couple, I think it was 4 or 5 years ago, we had like no snow through the month of January, early February, and then we got incredibly cold, and I think the ground was frozen down to about 6 inches. And I remember I had planted a whole bunch of tulips. I think I planted about 250 in addition to the 250 I already had. And it was one of those situations where I kind of got out in the garden really late. It was like, I don't know, just before Thanksgiving.
Right.
And I'm getting my, you know, I'm trying to push my shovel into the ground. I'm like, uh-uh, this isn't working. I'm not getting it down as far as I should. And instead of going, you know, maybe 5 inches or 6 inches, I was going 3 or 4 inches. And sure enough, all those tulip bulbs that I didn't get down far enough, they froze and they died.
Yeah.
They didn't come up. And
you know,
I'm really upset about that.
The thing about the plants like that, err on the side of deeper.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. Well, so for this week, it's a little bit of snow. Just give us the next few days real quick.
Yeah. Obviously nice today. The wind has shifted out of the west. So all the lake ice that was on the shoreline last night, 90% of it is pushed back into the middle of the lake. We still have a lot of ice out there right along the shoreline, but please, people, don't step onto it. Remain on the part where it's obviously pretty stable. So high temperature today, Mike, and Beth, about 25. You'll see a lot of high thin clouds come in late tonight. We'll start out overcast tomorrow morning. We'll probably trend towards a little bit of flurry activity towards dinner time tomorrow night. Most likely after midnight, we'll probably see some snow begin. I wouldn't be surprised by Tuesday morning. We see maybe an inch or two of snow. Not a big deal. It's just a little wave coming through. So nice tomorrow, relatively speaking, for the morning rush hour, maybe high about 26, 25, maybe 27 during the day on Tuesday. Then it kind of clouds up where it remains cloudy on Wednesday. Still Thursday and Friday, somewhat in that kind of overcast, high temperature near 30, and maybe another chance of some very, very light snow on Saturday. So the bottom line is there are no big snowstorms coming at us probably for the next 7 to 10 days. I don't see anything coming down the pike until maybe the middle of February, which, as far as I'm concerned, if you can get to about the 15th or 16th of February, the chances of having 2 or 3 days consecutive of below zero weather might drops off dramatically. I mean, literally, you can have 2 or 3 days of below zero weather. This is basically the coldest time of the year. Matter of fact, today is the day where the average temperature begins to go up. It's a high of 31 today for average. Yesterday and early in the week, it was down around 29 to 30. So we've actually begun to swing through the top of the bell curve, or swing out of the base of the bell curve. But if you can get to about the middle of February, the chances of you getting, you know, extreme cold for more than 2 or 3 days, the percentages drop off astronomically. So to me, if you can get through the next two and a half weeks, most of your severe winter weather is gone. And from what I can see looking at the long-range forecast, I'll go out on a limb right now, and I can predict that we won't have any zero-degree weather for the next 2 or 3 weeks. And that could conceivably take us through the end of the winter, really. We've only had we had 7 in the month of December, 1 in the month of January. We average around 10, so we may actually go down in the books as having a fairly average winter. I wouldn't be surprised if the second half of February turned out to be above normal. So we'll see how that goes, and hopefully we'll get a couple more inches of snow to help out the plant.
That would be great. Are you on Channel 2 anytime soon?
No, not on Channel 2 anytime soon. Continue with my school studies and teaching, and I got a pretty heavy load this semester. And Channel 2, as you know, is starting a new morning show on Monday. Instead of having Don and Roseanne Tejas anchoring, they're having Mike North and Dan Jiggett do the morning show. It's going to be called Monsters in the Morning and Money. So it's going to be sports and business.
Yeah, I saw
news,
that. Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how that works out. And
yeah, we'll see.
I'll be watching just to see what's up with that. It'll be interesting to see radio on TV, right?
Radio on TV. Hey, well, let's just put some cameras in here. I mean, how scary would that be?
It is certainly more fun. I was recently in that Channel 2 studio at the corner of State and Washington. And let me tell you, The WCPT studio has a lot more character.
You can say that again. Oh, dear. All right. Rick DeMaio Weather, he's here every Sunday at around 8:30, and you catch him sometimes in Channel 2. Go to his website, DeMaioWeather.com, or you can click onto it from my website, Mike Novak, NOWAK.net. And we will talk to you next week.
Okay, Mike. Take care. Bye-bye, Beth.
Bye-bye. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. I'll let you do yours after I do mine here. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. As you know, winter storms can snap tree limbs or even take down a tree. Do you know that the Care of Trees has 24-hour emergency service? The weight of storm-damaged trees is great, and they can be very dangerous to remove or prune. And if they've fallen on cars, other structures, or even other trees, and falling on another tree, that really complicates removal. In the Pacific Northwest, that tree is called a widowmaker, with good reason. The Care of Trees offers 24-hour emergency service to assist in performing the job safely while minimizing further risk to your property. With 9 locations, the Care of Trees has been serving Chicagoland for 60 years. The Care of Trees shares your enthusiasm for the many ways trees enhance the quality of your life. And the Care of Trees combines that joy with a dedication to the utmost in client care, putting you and your trees first. Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. Go to thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees.
The January-February edition of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine is out on the newsstands, and I've got the inside scoop on why you should pick up a copy. This is the Get Ready for the Gardening Year edition, which means there are stories about how to interpret what's on a seed packet, how to set up grow lights for when those packets arrive and you start raising your little plant babies. Speaking of seeds, if you're planning to grow tomatoes this year, there's a guide to open-pollinated heirloom varieties. And if you want to be the first on your block to have the latest and greatest varieties, Ball Horticultural's Jim Now presents his must-have list. This is the garden magazine for our region, which means Chicago and environs. You can find Chicagoland Gardening Magazine in your local store or garden center. More than 800 new newsstand locations have been added in the last couple of months. But why trudge out to the store when you can have it delivered to your home? There's even a guy named Mike who writes a column in the back of the magazine.
Really?
He's trying to be funny.
Really?
He tries to be funny in the back of the magazine every month.
Does he succeed?
Because he's what?
Does he succeed?
You know, sometimes.
Oh.
And he writes this month about how to transform your yard in 20 minutes. He's everywhere. So go to ChicagolandGardening.com or call 888-265-3600. That's 888-265-3800.
If you made a New Year's resolution to be kinder to your indoor plants, maybe you should actually get around to it. Sid's Greenhouses can help. Their first bit of advice is to clean off the leaves if they've gotten dusty. Dust on the leaves can block sunlight and reduce the plant's ability to photosynthesize. If the plant is small enough, take it into the tub and give it a lukewarm shower. If it's large, you can clean the leaves with a damp cloth. And now it's time to think about repotting plants as we get closer to spring. SIDS can help with the right soil mixes and fertilizers for every plant and one of Chicagoland's largest assortments of decorative pots and pottery. In fact, SIDS has just received a truckload shipment of pottery. Of course, you can always toss that underperforming plant onto the compost pile and get a lush new one. It's also time to plan this year's flower and vegetable garden. You know, some people would say it's heresy just tossing a plant. Some people just, like Heather.
We're going to discuss that in a minute because we have an underperforming houseplant here.
Right here in studio, yeah.
It was doomed to fail.
It's been hurting for a long time. Yeah. It's been put in a bad spot, but we'll get to that.
I want to help it.
It's also time to plan this year's flower and vegetable garden. The flower and vegetable seed packets are in at SIDS. Now, you know the popular varieties go fast, so visit SIDS early for the best selection, including certified organic seeds. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance, with the stars above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance. Need the
okay, here's what I'm going to do. We got folks calling in. They want advice. We got Rosemary, who's in Frankfurt. We got Samuel in Oaklawn. But first, we have Lionel on the south side. How you doing, Lionel?
Hey, how's it going, Mike? How are you?
Great. Thank you for being so patient. Here's what's going to happen. I'm going to have you ask your question, and we're probably going to answer it right after the news. So,
I basically just have a question. I overwintered a couple of roses indoors, and they're starting to sprout buds. And well, they're not flowering, but the buds are coming in, and I've noticed these stems are getting a little droopy. So
yeah.
I'm just wondering if everything's okay, if when I put them out in the garden this year, if they'll be okay, because they're waking up a little bit.
You know what, Lionel, that's a really good question, and you did something. It's a little tricky. Now, do you know what kind of roses they are?
Well, one is a Tropicana rose, and the other one I got from a box store, and it was on clearance. I think it may be a Blue Girl rose, but I'm not totally sure.
You know, the thing is, I'll tell you what, we're going to go into this in depth after the news, but bringing in a rose really needs to have a period of dormancy. Mm-hmm. It needs to get cold and go to sleep for a while. And you have kind of, I'm not saying you're going to lose it. I think we can help you get your roses to survive this year, but I'm going to tell you, next winter, let them go dormant over the winter. Plant them in the ground and let them go dormant.
Well, these were kept in containers. I didn't have the space to put them in the garden last year.
Yeah.
And so I put them in containers, and I brought the containers in because they were ceramic, and I didn't want them to crack.
Well, I tell you what, we're going to address that whole question after the news. I'm so glad you called. Okay. Tell you what, you hold on. I'm not sure what I'm going to send you, but I'm going to send you something. So hang on. Okay.
All right. Nope.
Beth Botts is in the studio. We've got a special mystery guest coming up after the 9 o'clock news, CNN. So stick around for that. It's the Mike Novak Show.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by SIDS Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes since 1997. Podcasts of this program, along with green tips, valuable links, and DeMaio weather, are a click away at MikeNovak.net. That's MikeNovak.net. Here he is, Mike Novak.
There's lots going on here today. This is Self-Help Sunday. Sometimes we call it Soft Serve Sunday. Call it a lot of other things, too. Mighty House is on at 10 a.m. This morning with Ron Cowgill and Joe Builder, and they are back in studio. Wow. So Joe will come in and start leering at Heather.
Yeah, he'll say something.
He'll say something.
I always take it as a compliment, but...
Why not?
One day I just want
you might as well.
I do. Oh, he's a wonderful man, but I just want to sneak in.
Don't say that. We're not supposed to blow his cover, you know?
True.
He's got this tough guy image.
Get what I left in here and not, you know, be like, Heather's in the studio. It's like, just let me sneak in and out.
No, no way.
No, never
that
in a million
does not
years.
Happen. And I said we had a special guest appearance. He is in studio all the way from Saturday morning, so it's like traveling in time, so to speak,
like
isn't it?
Who. A little bit. It's like Doctor Who or, comic books. It's a little bit like a comic book when, like, the Flash would appear in an episode or an issue of Superman.
It's the man who pilots spaceship Jake Hartford, Greg Alexander. How you doing, Greg?
Good morning. Happy Seed Day. I brought raisins.
Oh. Do you have one for Beth?
I didn't know she was here. She's got a lovely plant, though.
It's all right. My nose is not out of joint.
Greg's not here because he knows anything about plants, but he's here to learn.
I love knowledge. I could use quite a bit of self-help, quite frankly.
And we will teach you, Grasshopper.
That's good. There's things to know.
First of all, I want to take care of some unfinished business. Let's go back to Lionel. Lionel, you know, you with me there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. You had a great question about your rose plants. We went, you know, I wasn't sure what I wanted to send you because I just wanted to be nice to you for hanging out for so long. And so Heather went digging in my pile of books that I have in the storage closet next door, and the ones that haven't been stolen from the radio station. And there's a great book. I won't even talk about that. There's a great book called Growing Roses in Cold Climates, and it's perfect for you.
Yeah, it would be. Thanks.
Yeah, so we're going to send that off to you, okay?
Yeah, really. Thanks. I appreciate that.
Now, let's address your problem. And by the way, I'm happy that we've got so many people calling in about different things. We're going to get to you all. 773-838-9278. Beth Botts from the Chicago Tribune and her own blog and elsewhere is here in the studio. Greg Alexander's here. Heather Fry is here. Wow. Lots of folks. This is exciting.
We're not going to run out of oxygen, are we?
Nope.
Yeah, we will, probably. That plant that's on the table has obviously done that.
That plant is one sad-looking plant.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. That's the plant here in the studio. But your rose, for those of you who just tuned in, Lionel says that he brought his rose plants indoors before the end of the season, and now they're getting the little droopy and I'll bet a little leggy.
Yes.
And Beth and I both know the problem with that, but I'm going to let Beth speak.
Well, the problem is that rose plants don't really belong indoors. Rose plants are outdoor shrubs, and they want to live in the ground, and they want to go through a period of winter dormancy.
Would you say the same thing even about miniature roses? Because a lot
even
of people
about miniature roses, okay. Even about miniature roses, the ones you know you get for Mother's Day or whatever. Actually, most of those are really bred in greenhouses, and they're really bred to be sort of discarded after the season. But if you want to try to overwinter them, you got to plant them outside. If you want to plant roses in the container, one great way to do that is if you actually plant the roses in a plastic container that will fit down into your ceramic container,
okay.
Then you can take those roses, you can dig a hole in your garden and drop the plastic pot down into the ground and then mulch around it so that it actually does spend the winter in the ground. It goes through all the experiences that the rose needs to go through.
Okay.
You protect the top growth with, you know, a pile of leaves or mulch or something. And then in the spring, you sort of excavate the whole thing and drop the plastic pot back into your decorative ceramic container. And that way you protect your container from freezing, but you also let your rose live a normal life.
Wow. That's a great idea. I never thought about doing it that way.
Well, that's why Beth is here, because she has, and she's knows a lot about this. And here, now, the thing I would say, I think that's a great way for overwintering, but the question we have now is how to keep your plants alive. And the first thing I'm going to tell you, and I hope you agree, Beth, is don't take them outdoors too early, or
no.
The cold will kill them now, because you've stressed them out, and they're used to the warm temperatures.
Right. Oh.
Okay, so you have to be careful. You're going to have to wait, and I would say April or May or something like that, when
right.
It's really pretty warm. So you're going to have to see, now that you've put them in suspended animation or whatever.
Well, you've actually taken them out of suspended animation.
Yeah, you have.
That's
actually
the
quite the opposite. Yeah, that means that you have to support them and keep them warm until the temperatures are warm enough to put them outside, and then once they're warm enough, they'll probably be fine. And the other thing is, don't slam them immediately into the sun either. You're going to have to take them out a little bit at a time, like bring them out on the back porch for a while, bring them indoors. You know, what they call hardening off, which you usually do not with roses, but with other plants. You're going to have to harden them back off so that you can get them outside. And this better not end up on Jake's show, by the way.
I'm actually thinking about this as we speak.
Yeah, I know. I knew that was going to happen. But the thing is, so what you will start to do in the spring is on a warm day, bring them outside in the shade, and then let them be out there in the warmth, bring them in back at night when it's cool, and do that for a while, for several weeks. And then you can risk putting them a little bit out in the sun for a little bit of time each day. And then finally, when you feel like they seem to be holding their own, then you can plant them back in and then let them grow the rest of the season. And then either do what Beth said about leaving them in the ceramic pot. Or I'd
put him in a plastic pot. He's got a problem with trying to preserve this non-frost-proof ceramic pot.
Right, put him in the plastic, which you put in the ceramic.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
If you want to do that. But then in the winter, yeah, you're going to have to leave them outside. So.
Well, I have another question. Can I keep them in as houseplants since they've kind of been trained as houseplants now?
No, you can't. These are outdoor plants.
Yeah.
What I would do with them...
It's like trying to keep a squirrel in the house. But
yeah, it's not going to work.
Actually, we've had that person who did have a pet squirrel, so I really can't even say that.
No. It would be good if you could put them in, you know, like if you have one of those enclosed black porches, if you have some place where it's pretty cool, it's not in your heated, you know, you don't ever want them to freeze, but you just sort of want them to be in a place where it's like 50, 60 degrees, if possible. You're going to have to water them and pay real close attention to disease because, again, they're not really built to be indoor plants. And you probably are going to have to cut them back when you put them outside.
How much?
Well, it'll depend.
They're like
they're going to be leggy. They're will have stretched.
Yeah. So
yeah,
you know you
very long.
Yeah.
They're
yeah. You're
now.
You really need to consolidate the energy of the plant, send it back into the root system, and it's really if they're leggy, and that's one of the things that'll help save the plant. You can't just
leave. Should I do that now? Or in the springtime.
Well, you want to leave it some. You can cut it back some now. You do want to leave it some leaf area. You don't want to cut it back down because I'm assuming it does have leaves.
Yeah, it has lots of leaves. It's actually starting in the bud.
If you cut it back like maybe half, mm-hmm. but you leave it, you know, some leaves to gather what little sunlight it can gather in the house.
Okay.
You're trying to nurse this plant through this very, very, very strange experience it's going through.
The plant's having an out-of-body experience here, Lionel.
Yeah, it's in front of a large window in my basement.
Yeah.
My basement is heated. It's probably about 60 degrees at all times.
And ooh.
I'm just a little concerned because they're starting to flower, and they're getting very leggy.
You know what? I'm going to tell you something you don't want to hear, Lionel. Cut those buds off.
Cut those buds off.
Yeah, cut them back because I know you're thinking, oh, I'm going to get it to bloom, but it's going to take so much energy out of the plant that it might not make it.
Okay. That's all you have to tell me.
So if you want to save that plant, do it. Be real careful about getting it back out in the spring. Cut the buds off now. Cut it back. You're still going to get even more leggy growth, which, again, you're going to have to cut back in the spring when you put it outside.
Okay.
I would say like a third. Cut off a third of not more than that because I'm afraid the plant won't survive if you cut off more than a third. And that's kind of the standard.
Yeah. The general rule is when you're pruning a shrub, you don't want to cut off more than a third at one time.
Yeah. So, Lionel, and I'm sending you the book. I hope it helps. And I'll tell you what, do me a favor and call me in the spring and let me know how your rose bush is doing.
I will. Thank you for answering my question. Thanks.
Okay, well, I'm going to put you on hold because Heather still needs to get your info so she can send you the book, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right, take care.
Now, does it help to talk to the plants? Is this a scientifically proven thing, or is this just kind of a flaky hippie thing?
It makes gardeners feel better.
All right.
You know, there may be some sort of placebo effect. I kind of feel that if you enjoy talking to your plants, you should talk to your plants.
I yell at my plants. I say, stop that.
See, I think that's abusive, and they're not going to grow up in the proper environment.
Well, you should see my plants. They react to it.
You have army plants.
My plants are, you know, they tolerate me now. They're used to it.
Do you name your plants?
No.
See, I have a potted plant that's about 8-10 years old. His name is Robert.
Well,
get it?
Robert Plant. You're not the first one who's ever come up
with
that.
I'm quite positive of this.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm probably not ever going to be the last on that either. But
I don't have a rim shot. I just have to. I hit the bell. There we go.
Oh, I'll show you where it is.
Oh, okay. It's in the system. All right.
I've talked to Robert a long time. Don't really give him a whole lot of care. Put him by the window. He gets some sunlight. Robert's doing wonderful.
Do you know what kind of plant?
It's a green plant, thank you.
It's a green plant.
Yes.
Okay, well, see, you're actually doing some things that are good for houseplants, which most houseplants, of course, it would help if we did know what kind of plant this was. But
it does help.
Most plants, the biggest cause of houseplant death is overwatering, not underwatering.
Oh, that's never a problem.
So if
well,
you're
good.
If you're
it's probably
letting
why it's been
it,
alive for so uh-huh. long.
If you're letting, you know, you most of these plants are more or less tropical, so you don't actually want to let them live in a desert. But if you do let the soil dry out several inches down before you water, that's usually a good thing. And you're keeping it near a window where it can at least get some sunlight, because plants do need that. So,
I remember that. I think they tried to teach us that in fourth grade.
Have you ever fertilized this plant?
No.
Well, it might be a good idea.
At some point.
At some point.
The stuff that, like, you know, liquid you just drop
yeah.
in.
Yeah, they got little,
they have little
Heather
pellets,
said,
they have
made,
little sticks.
They've made an idiot-proof fertilizer, yet I still kill plants.
Just poke stick these little green stick things into the soil, and they release some fertilizer when you water. Think about it again.
I guess. Do you find, I had a friend who was a lawn care guy. And he knew people who had done the fertilizer sticks around trees.
Around trees. I don't believe in those.
I don't believe that either. And he said that the roots actually tried to grow around them. So,
right.
You know, so
yeah,
I don't know
no.
if that's a...
But, you know, these houseplant things, we got to think of some way for these people to give their plants some sort of nutrition without ever having to think about it again. Because they may.
That's not possible, Beth. You know that.
You're
it's not possible.
It's not possible.
No, it's not.
But there also are these slow-release pellets that you can just sort of sprinkle around the surface of the soil. And if you remember to do that, like, you know, three times a year.
Oh, I was thinking for Robert's birthday.
Birthday,
great.
Yeah.
That's not
until
August, though.
I would do it in the spring.
All right.
We'll have an early party for Robert. Okay?
That's good. Good
right.
to know.
It's the Mike Novak Show in Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. That is Greg Alexander. He's with the Jake Hartford Show, Saturdays from 7 to 11. I hope you all tune in. Nice big plug for Jake. I know Jake's a big fan of cross promotion. He gets people to call my show all the time.
Yeah.
And we're on the AM dial, we're on the FM dial, and we got a bunch of phone calls, so let's get back to them real quick. I'll tell you what, somebody from the first hour who called earlier is Amtrak Tim on line 4. How you doing, Amtrak Tim?
I'm doing great, Mike. It's been a wonderful week.
It has, and Amtrak Tim, as the name suggests, calls because he's a big fan of rail travel. And we just got a whole bunch of money for Illinois high-speed rail. Now, let me ask you a question. Some people say we should have gotten more. What do you think?
Honestly, I have to agree with that, because if you look at the network, the most people served and the most states served is going to be the Illinois network, or the Chicago-based network, which is going to go up to Minnesota, Wisconsin, Missouri, Indiana, Ohio, and they just get a little bit into Kentucky and Michigan. I'm sorry. Don't forget Michigan.
That's right.
Just a little bit. California is basically a California network, and Florida is just basically a Florida network.
You know, that does make sense, because it's going to improve the economies of several states here in the Midwest, and there's going to be $1.2 billion coming our way. But you know what? Let's rejoice in that, the fact that finally there's some movement in high-speed rail.
Exactly. This is going to be what I call higher speed rail. As opposed
right.
To
I noticed that we're not getting up to high speed rail yet. We're going to be going slightly over 100 miles an hour, right?
We're going to do 110, but there's a very important reason for that in terms of engineering.
We don't want the train to go off the tracks, but other than
you can design trains to go faster and rails to go faster. But the thing is, that will allow us to be able to move both freight and passengers on those rails. And you also, I mean, your listeners should be made aware that rail freight traffic is also much more carbon friendly than road truck traffic. There's a lot less carbon produced moving cargo.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, that's a given.
And the other thing that's really important, I'm really in favor of the 110 over the super high speed, because you're going to get more miles of track for the same amount of cost. and the locomotives, instead of being made in Toulouse, France, or in Japan or in China, are going to be made in Erie, Pennsylvania, at the G Locomotive Works.
Oh, see, that part of it I didn't know.
If you go to high speed, the locomotives and probably the rail cars are going to be made overseas.
Aha, uh-huh. At least now. Until we start doing some of that, and we won't do any of that until we start doing at least higher speed rail.
But the reason I like the 110 over the 220, California's going to try it, and I think they're going to fail because they're going to build about maybe a quarter or a third of the system, and then they're going to have a political change in Washington and in California, and then they're going to be stuck with a monorail that goes nowhere. Whereas in Illinois, we're going to cooperate, like Metra does, with the freight railroads, improve the system for both freight and passenger, and when there's a political change, we'll have a corporate ally to make sure there's follow-through.
Interesting. Warren Buffett bought
the BNSF Railroad for a reason. He knows this is coming. So when he's going to basically get some of his railroad upgraded for free, thanks to the U.S. taxpayer, but it's more carbon friendly. So when there's a change in the political climate, we'll have Mr. Buffett there in front of Congress as a spokesperson saying, we should finish this project, it's better for the environment. As opposed to the people who are going for true high speed, who are going to be directly competing and taking business away from the airlines, who are going to do everything in their power to destroy it. Texas tried this a number of years ago, and I'm going to mention an airline which starts with an S and has a W in there somewhere. And they defeated true high-speed rail in Texas because it was a takeaway their business.
Wait a second. You're not talking about the airline that I think is one of the good guys, are you?
The one that only goes in one direction.
That only goes in one direction?
Yeah,
which is actually two directions.
You're right.
Yeah, that airline lobbied the Texas legislature super hard.
Oh, dear.
And destroyed the Texas T-Bone, which is going to be our first attempt at true higher speed rail. And because of them, train traffic in the state of Texas passenger train traffic is horrible. It's absolutely horrible.
Let me ask you, Tim, this higher speed rail that's planned for the Chicago, a network radiating from Chicago, how much would that reduce the travel time for a passenger from, say, from Chicago to St. Louis and from Chicago to Detroit?
Well, it's probably going to be the equivalent of flying, even at 110, because we've had all these terrorist incidents. You're going to have to show up to the airport 2 or 3 hours early, and then you're still going to have the flying time, and you're still going to have to get off the plane. Whereas anybody who's ridden Amtrak security is basically a dog sniffs you. That's it.
Right.
The dog comes up and sniffs you, if you even get that.
Well, what happens?
Yeah, if you're really being dissed if the dog won't even sniff you, right?
What happens about all the grade crossings in the Chicago area? That's one of the big issues.
Well, that's where the upgrade is going to have to come. That's where a lot of the money is going to go into. Is you're going to have to improve the safety. Once you get outside the Chicagoland area, let's say you get very far downstate, there are a lot of grade crossings where it's a sign, and that's it. That's it. It's just a sign.
Mm-hmm.
So for safety reasons, those trains are limited to 79 miles an hour. That's where the 79 miles an hour comes from. If you improve all those grade crossings and improve the signaling and safety, then 110 becomes possible. The locomotives that we have right now, the Genesis 2 locomotives that you see, the flat noses you see that Amtrak runs, those are capable of 110 miles an hour right now. And those single-level cars they pull behind them are capable of 125 miles an hour. In terms of equipment, the equipment is ready to rock and roll. All we need are the safety and signaling issues to be taken care of.
Well, some of that obviously is going to happen. Thanks, Tim. It's always a pleasure hearing from you. And, let me ask you just one thing, and I don't want to go into too much detail here, but I was wondering whether... I'll save it for another day. I had a very complex question, and I want to get to Rosemary, who's been hanging on a long time. So, Amtrak Tim, keep us posted on the upgrading, and we will talk to you soon, buddy.
Have a good one, Mike.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
It's the Mike Nowlak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. And Beth Botts is in the studio with me. We're answering questions, talking to people. Greg Alexander is here from the Jake Hartford Show. He's spying, getting material for next Saturday morning.
The monorail that goes to nowhere sounds like it could be like a Hitchcock movie or an Agatha Christie, you know, like a really good, deep, detailed book kind of horror.
The monorail. You know, they actually have a monorail to nowhere, and that's in Detroit.
Didn't they stop building it about halfway?
Well, they built it downtown, but it really doesn't connect anything. I mean, but there's nothing to connect there. But soon, there may be an urban farm. I mean, that's a story that I really want to cover in some detail, because apparently some multimillionaire wants to gobble up all this real estate in Detroit and create the largest urban farm in the world, which I think is a great idea.
It's nice to see one of those fat cats doing some good stuff.
There you go. Give us a call, 773-838-9278. Are you going to yell at the bankers now, too?
Oh, screw the bankers. Just the little banker. I'm sorry, just the big bankers,
right,
not
yeah.
the little bankers.
Yeah. Boy, that word's been bandied about here a lot on the show today. Let's go to line one and talk to Rosemary. How you doing, Rosemary?
Fine, Mike, fine. Good morning, and I love your show. I listen to it all the time.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Yes, I have a question about mulching, and this is in the vegetable garden. It's a phenomenon that I've been noticing. I found many years ago that the best way to hold carrots for winter use is to leave them in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I mulch them well before a heavy freeze, and you know, leave them. As a matter of fact, had my grandson over last weekend, and we dug out about a half a bushel of carrots.
Wow! What do you mulch them with?
Oh gosh, I usually put over a layer of floating row cover just to keep the plants a little cleaner, and then we let our neighbor buy the expensive lawn vacuum because he hates all the oak leaves on his lawn. And so he brings them right over to our garden, dumps them right in the garden.
And they're free, right?
I know. I love it. We don't even have to have the gas, you know, run in the tractor.
Don't you love the idea that you got your neighbor who's obviously a neatness freak?
Oh, he is.
And so he buys this expensive piece of machinery so that he can suck up leaves and chop them up and give them to you.
Right.
So it's like you're making money on this deal.
Oh, just like a bandit. We've been doing this for years. He loves the arrangement, and of course we love it. But we go ahead and mulch over the floating row cover with the leaves, and then my husband will usually get some hay or straw and cover it over again just to give it an extra thickness layer. And we, like I said, last weekend we were in the garden digging up carrots, and the ground is perfectly thawed, no problem with freezing or anything. We get gorgeous carrots that are just as sweet as could be. But also what I wanted to add, to ask about was my carrots in the winter are larger than when digging them in the fall.
Well, they've been growing. They're roots.
Can they honestly grow?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Under all that mulch without any light?
That's why they can grow. Because the mulch is keeping the temperature you know, if the ground isn't frozen completely, plants will continue to grow.
The root systems will continue to grow.
And that's what a carrot is.
And that's what a carrot is. It's a taproot.
Yeah.
Well, we've been noticing, and I thought, I've got to call Mike's program and find out for sure. Is this something that I'm just imagining, or is it really happening?
No, one of the things, the Care Trees is a great sponsor on the show, and one of the tips they have is that tree roots continue to grow in the winter unless they're completely frozen. So, and that happens with all kinds of plants.
Plants store a lot of energy, and they store a lot of nutrients in their root systems during the growing season, and then they can draw on that all the way through the winter, unless they're dormant. And you've kept your carrots from going completely dormant.
Right.
So they've been drawing on the energy and the nutrients that they collected in the sunlight last summer, and they're still growing.
Wonderful, wonderful. I was just, I couldn't believe how much larger they got this year. And I'm thinking to myself, I got to talk to someone to find out for sure. Can this really be? Well, thank you very much. Well,
I have a question for you. Yes. A couple of questions, Rosemary. One, you were talking about the row covers.
Yeah.
Explain what exactly you're using, where you got them.
Oh gosh, the floating row cover. They're in all the seed catalogs.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny's has it. It's just a little filament cover like a blanket that you put over, and I usually put it on some of the plants that I want to try to extend the season a little bit longer, because sometimes we get, especially out here, we get those heavy frosts that really kill off plants completely before they're really ready. Then we get like 2 or 3 weeks of really nice weather, and that's when you want to pick the broccoli and the cauliflower.
Exactly. Now, are they on some kind of frame?
No. I just lay it over and usually put down some either rocks or some rails down next to the, you know, on the sides of it, and then it's something you can easily, you know, turn back to just go ahead and you know, harvest your crop then.
And the other question, go ahead, Beth.
You say out there, where are you? Out in the western suburbs somewhere?
We're in Frankfurt. We're down south.
You're in Frankfurt. Okay.
Yeah.
And the other question I had, are you going to be planting more vegetables this year?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I think we've got our son talked into putting a row of potatoes in his backyard so I can get the potatoes out of my garden and plant more beans and carrots and all the other vegetables that I can stick in the freezer, and then that way we can share the bounty.
What do you got against potatoes?
Oh, I don't have anything against potatoes.
She just doesn't have enough space in her
garden,
like everybody else.
I don't have the room to put everything else in. But the one thing that you were asking about previously, about what I, you know, what people would do differently, for, you know, whether you're going to change what you're doing in your landscape.
Yeah.
From taking down my Christmas decorations, I started pulling things out of other rooms to put them, you know, on display where they haven't been normally, and it's kind of changed up the rooms. And I thought, I think I'm going to do the very same thing in some of the flower beds that I'm going to be, you know, looking at carefully this year, and possibly transplanting instead of buying something new, cut something back and transplant it into a flower bed where it hasn't been growing to hopefully get a better start and to give the bed a new look without costing anything.
That's absolutely a great idea, Rosemary. And people should not be afraid to move plants around. You shouldn't be afraid to move perennials around. If you've got something that doesn't really look right in a place, or it doesn't seem to be doing all that well where you've got it planted, don't be scared to dig it up and try it somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Well, Rosemary, thank you so much. Great hearing from you, and I'm glad we answered your question about carrots. I think we should send Rosemary. I think we got to send Rosemary something too. I don't know what. We'll go searching for a book for you. We'll find something, and that's sitting in the pile of
If we don't have anything fitting for vegetable gardens, I do know we have Roy Diblick's book to give away.
Oh, that would be great.
Great.
So at the very least, you'll get Roy Diblick's book, and you can read all about mulching and whether it's good for your plants or not. But as we know, leaf mulch is always good for your plants. So hang on and talk to Heather.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we need to. We got one more call. Samuel is in Oak Lawn. Hang on, Sam. I will take care of this, and then we'll take care of you. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Choosing a tree for your property is part art and part science. City trees have to tolerate some tough conditions, including wintertime road salt spray and runoff. Roots have a hard time penetrating Chicago-area soil, which is typically clayey with rocks and rubble mixed in. Some of it dates back to the Great Chicago Fire. It depends where you live in the city. I mean, I want to dig in my yard and find a bottle from, 1870 or something.
I find stuff in my yard all the time. Because there was a house on our garden before there was an apartment building. I find construction debris in my yard all the time.
There's also lots of lead in your soil, but that's you don't have to worry about that with trees, but if you're planting a vegetable garden, it's something you need to think about. But back to trees, Chicago soil also tends to be alkaline, which means it has a high pH, making it hard for some trees to extract the essential nutrients they need, like pin oaks, which everybody wants to grow. Doesn't work that great here. Red maple trees. You might want to try a different variety. Meanwhile, asphalt streets and parking lots soak up heat, creating urban heat islands that put stress on trees in summer. And, of course, Chicago trees have to be able to withstand extreme cold, too. The Care of Trees can help you make the right decisions about choosing a tree. With 9 locations, the Care of Trees has been serving Chicagoland for 60 years, putting you and your trees first. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard or you're changing your landscaping, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. 394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
DR Services Unlimited has been providing Chicago's North Shore with award-winning remodeling and design-build services since 1991, giving their clients top quality service and real value. They're on the cutting edge of green building technology, helping clients make their home more energy efficient without sacrificing beauty or function. If you want to make your home more energy efficient, simply want to add a room or renovate, call DR Services at 847-998-1687 or visit them at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
And of course, you know what we're talking about with DR Services. It's that Ron Cowgill guy. He's got a great company, and I know he's pretty modest about it, about plugging himself during Mighty House. So I'm doing it for him. And Heather, you want to jump in with that?
If Ron and his guys can't fix it, it's broken.
That's right. It can't be fixed. Mighty House at 10 o'clock right here on WCPT. AM and FM. Beth Botts is with me in the studio. Greg Alexander, Heather Fry, and we're just sitting around answering garden questions. How, you learn anything there, Greg?
I've learned a lot more about mulch than I ever thought there was to know.
She's been here when the worm girl was
here. Ooh, there was a worm girl?
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, urban worm girl.
She knew about worms, or she looked like a worm?
She grows
gorgeous.
Worms.
She was absolutely
ooh,
beautiful.
Good to know. I was in a rock band called Mulch once. I played a little guitar, and I was in.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you were in a band called Urban Worm Girl.
No, oh, I was in a band called Urban Agriculture, though.
Were you really?
Yeah, yeah, and a band called Mulch. I was in another band in the early 90s. I played little keyboards and guitar.
How many bands?
What was
you...
the name of that band?
That band was called Nirvana.
Oh, I thought you're no. So you're not the guy who killed himself.
No.
Okay,
no.
You're the other one.
No, not yet.
Yeah. Let's go to line three. Samuel, you're on the Mike Novak Show.
Hello.
How are you?
Great.
What's up?
So this praying mantis, I got all these Japanese beetles on the rose bushes and the cucumber beetles, the aphids.
You got lots of beetle problems, huh?
Yeah, I tried the Grubex a couple years ago. That didn't do anything for the grubs in the Garden Safer.
Ooh, the Grubs, that would be a good name for a rock band.
Yeah, that Grubs would work, yeah. And so you're wondering about using praying mantis?
Right. Sid's
mantids?
Greenhouse told me a little bit about them.
At Sid's?
Yes.
Cool. You know what? I'll tell you one thing. I would rather go with a biological control like praying mantids than Grubex and stuff like that.
Yeah, half a dozen years ago there were some, you know, they overwintered and everything. And then they were gone.
Well, you know, praying mantises, they have wings. They can leave. All these beneficial insects, that's one thing about them. You buy a quart of ladybugs and you release them in your garden. And the fact is that the ladybugs have free will. They can they can take off. You know,
how do you know that?
Well, because they do. you know, a praying mantis, these beneficial insects and praying mantises are a great idea. I doubt that a praying mantis would eat enough, even if he decided to stay around. I doubt he would eat enough to take care of your cucumber beetle and Japanese beetle problem. The best thing to do about Japanese beetles is to just be...
hunker down, is just get out of the way and let them eat.
No, the best thing to do is to pay attention to your roses, especially if you know that you've had a problem before. Pay attention to your plants, look for the first Japanese beetles, and hand pick them off. Just drop them into soapy water to kill them. Hand pick them off early.
Yeah.
And that will really reduce the amounts that you get later. Because the thing about Japanese beetles is they send out these pheromones, and they attract more Japanese beetles. And
once they've started munching, and that's the thing, when they start munching on a plant...
And they say, ooh, hey, good eats, let me tell all my friends.
Yeah.
And they send out these pheromones, and every Japanese beetle from miles around comes. So the thing to do about those Japanese beetles is get the first few early, and then hopefully the Japanese beetles will find something in your neighbor's yard or some yard half a mile away, and they will gather the whole clan there instead of gathering it in your yard.
And now the other thing about praying mantises, or mantids, however you want to say it.
Manti.
Manti. There we go. That would be the band.
The Manti. The praying manti.
The praying manti.
That's good. I'm going to write that down.
Okay, write that down. They will eat anything, Samuel. They're not. A lot of people, I do this at garden clubs. I say, all right, is this a good insect or a bad insect? And everybody goes, oh, it's a good insect. And I say, it's neither. It will eat anything that comes down the pike. A praying mantis doesn't care whether it's eating a Japanese beetle or a ladybug. It just wants to eat. And it'll eat its own. You know, you know the stories about the female mantids, which will bite the head off the male even as... Well, they're in the act, usually, when that happens. I saw a photo once of a praying mantis snatching a hummingbird out of the air. Okay,
I don't want to lose them.
Well, no, yeah. I don't think you have to worry. I don't think very many praying mantis are that voracious.
Yeah.
But the point about them is they're really more about, I don't know, they're more of a curiosity piece than a real biological control in your garden. What I would do, though, is I would avoid the toxic chemicals and...
Is the fungicide 3 by Garden Safer as bad?
I don't know that particular product. I'd have to go look. Fungicide 3 or Fungicide 3 by...
Garden Safer is supposed to be organic. You know.
Well, there's a lot of organic products out there, yeah. You know, and if you can get something that's on the organic side. And so do you actually read label directions to try to make sure that you're doing something safe?
Right. You know, and it worked up until a couple years ago, and then it just... Stuff is so bad it doesn't work.
Oh, anymore. It's neem oil. Okay, yeah, you can use that. Fine. You know, neem oil is okay. You're going.
No, neem oil is pretty benign.
Yeah,
but I thought it was salt,
you know, if you have an overwhelming fungus problem on some plant,
because of the bugs, right?
I'm sorry.
Because of the bugs, create
no,
the fungus.
Not necessarily. The fungus spores are in the air.
Yeah.
And they can, you know, be blown in from anywhere. There's not necessarily a relationship between having fungus diseases and having insects. If you have certain plants that are really, really susceptible to fungus diseases, the thing to do may be to give up on those plants and get yourself some disease-resistant plants.
Like the knockout rose?
Yeah, like the knockout rose,
right.
Yeah.
You know, and
something, you know, the easiest way to avoid having to fight diseases is to get plants that, if you keep them healthy, can resist the diseases on their own.
Yeah, because the cannas flowers, they get black leaves all over the place. And I don't know if that's from using the... previous year's potting containers in the soil or what?
If you are concerned, that is a possibility. There are soil diseases that are carried by by reusing potting soil.
Yeah.
If you suspect that might be the problem, then get fresh potting soil. Put the old potting soil in your compost, and it'll probably get hot enough to kill off the problems. Or if you really think you have a soil disease, or you really think you have insect eggs overwintering in the potting soil, by all means, get rid of the potting soil, put it in the landscape waste and have it taken away.
Yeah.
The thing to remember about organic insecticides is they're still insecticides. Some of them are, you know, less toxic than the conventional insecticides, but in order to kill an insect, it has to be a poison. And so you want to be really careful about that, too. The best thing to try to do about all of these insect problems and all of these disease problems is to try to keep your plants healthy and to tolerate a certain, you know, light amount of damage. If you have a healthy plant, it's probably going to be able to withstand a certain amount of damage without dying. But if you have a plant that just gets infested over and over again and you find yourself just fighting that plant every single year, you know, at a certain point, the answer is just give up and get a better plant.
Right.
And, you know, that's really, really good advice. And, you know, in talking about Japanese beetles, there, There's very few ways to fight them effectively, especially, and they're usually only there for a few weeks. Now, they can do some extensive damage in a few weeks, but probably the best thing you can do about Japanese beetles is get rid of the plants that they really like. Now, unfortunately, they like roses, and a lot of people...
Well, again, if I replace it with a knockout rose, is that going
to... Well, no, they're not immune to Japanese beetles. Yeah. But again, the best thing to do about Japanese beetles is to be alert and try and get them early. Try and get them before they decide that your yard is the best place to party. And
isn't there where they come from, the grubs in the ground?
Well, they do, but they can fly...
From other places.
They can fly in from other places.
You can fix the grub problem in your yard, if you have a grub problem, but you can still get Japanese beetles. So if your neighbor's got is not addressing any of the issues, then you're stuck. And
the best thing to do about the grub problem is make sure that you're not overwatering the lawn, because very often... overwatering the lawn is what it makes a nice habitat for those slugs.
Yeah, if you let your lawn go a little bit dry in the summer, which it'll go a little bit dormant, and it's not as attractive to the grubs.
And it's coming from the neighbor, then.
So there you go. So have a talk with your neighbor. Samuel, thanks for calling. I appreciate it. I hope we helped a little bit anyway.
Well, definitely. I thought the praying mantis would do it. So.
No, not necessarily. No. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't keep looking at the different kinds of biological controls. And check with the University of Illinois Extension Service. That's another thing. Don't just call us. Go to Extension. Talk to a master gardener. Of course, Beth and I are both master gardeners. But you should continue to look in your area and talk to the people in your area.
You know, I called a botanic garden a couple weeks ago because, you know, I have the mini roses and, their second year, they were like a foot and a half high like they were the first year. And I mulched them, you know, after the ground was frozen. And this year, you know, it snowed so quick, you know, and the snow was on there, and I didn't get a chance to put the mulch on, and they told me the leaves that I saved in the garage is going to have bugs in it to throw it away, you know, because I thought, you know, once the snow went away, you know, like it did last week, that I could put the mulch on there.
I don't know why you couldn't. I'm trying to imagine what would be wrong with the leaves in your garage.
It's possible that insects might have been able to overwinter in the leaves in a way that they wouldn't have been able to overwinter if the leaves had been outside.
Right.
But if you put them outside now in this freezing weather, that'll take care of them pretty quickly, won't it?
It might, if we get a good freeze. But Rick DeMaio was saying that our chances of a really hard freeze are diminishing as time goes on.
But aren't they going to start growing sooner than they should if I had mulched them?
Yeah, they might. You could take a chance with the leaves, or you could go to the garden center and buy a bag of some fine-grained mulch and pile around them.
You know, I'm sorry. On this one, I don't... Okay, maybe they're right.
You're not worried about the leaves.
I'm not worried about the leaves in the garage. I think because you're probably not going to put them 6 inches deep, right?
Yeah, probably,
You know, it's going to be a thin layer, and it's going to provide the organic material. You're not wasting the leaves in the garage. I suppose at the very least you could throw them into the compost pile and then in the spring they'd break down and then you could put that in your yard. But personally, if I had them, I'd use them.
Okay.
But that's
Then use the leaves. But this, folks, if you're trying to save leaves, this is a good reason why it's a good idea to put a tarp over your pile of leaves rather than to put them in the garage. Because you do want those cold freezes in January to kill whatever was in the leaves.
Yeah. So, all right. Thanks for calling, Samuel. I appreciate it.
Thanks again. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye. It's we need to talk about that. We have 10 minutes to talk about all these things that we didn't get to, but that's the way these shows always work, right? Now, I know that on the Jake Hartford show, it's like clockwork. Everything is just...
We are planned down to the millisecond.
Just like, you know, I know how that works. You know, I've listened.
That's what we do.
Yeah. I'm going to... I should sit in on your show so that I can see how it's really done.
We'll see what we can do.
Okay, thanks. I appreciate that. Before we get to the outdoor gardening, before we get to the budget crunch at the University of Illinois Extension, Sid's Greenhouses thinks you might want to get some indoor gardening done. Now, Sid's has a great selection of indoor tropicals, but they want you to be smart. about buying them. First, do your homework and fit the plants to the conditions of your home. Take into account light, drafts, and humidity, and just how much time you're willing to spend on your plants. You know, some people are like, they've got a Robert plant that sits in the corner and they don't do a whole lot.
Once every other week or so.
There you go. Now, there's no sense getting something exotic and fussy if you're just as happy with a low-maintenance workhorse. If you already have indoor plants, well, we're getting towards the repotting time, basically just as the growing season starts. SIDS can help with the right soil mixes and fertilizers for every plant, and one of Chicagoland's largest assortments of decorative pots and pottery. It's also time to plan this year's flower and vegetable garden. The flower and vegetable seed packets are in at SIDS. You know the popular varieties go fast, so visit SIDS early and often for the best selection, including certified organic seeds. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard.
How to look at an image. Why is it the most popular feature on the One History website? Using multicultural photographs, this remarkable teaching tool takes students and teachers step by step through the process of seeing, interpreting, and using photographs and other images. It provides information on where historical images can be found online and provides discussion questions that help you get the most out of an image. Check out the website at www.onehistory.org. That's www.onehistory.org. Or, if you want us to work with your students directly, we can do a presentation at your school. Call us at 216-956-6300. 216-956-6300.
We're in the home stretch here on the Mike Novak Show. A couple of things we wanted to get to before we sign off. Beth Botts is here in the studio with me. You know, sometime real soon, she doesn't know it, but I'm going to turn her loose on this show because I need to take a week off. And you get to read all the commercials. And we'll let Heather run the controls here. Or maybe we'll bring in Greg. I don't know.
It's like... Excuse me? Heather,
I've been dying for you to take a day off for a year now.
Well, that's nice. meanwhile, we've got another budget crunch with Illinois Extension.
Yeah, well, you know, the state of Illinois budget is a smoking bomb crater now, which is
yeah.
Why we're having so much trouble with this governor's race and all this other politics we're not going to talk about. But one of the part of the fallout from that is that the University of Illinois Extension is facing huge budget cuts, and they're planning they're getting ready, seeking public input to plan a massive reorganization. We don't really know what that reorganization is going to amount to, and we don't really know how it's going to affect all of the programs that the extension does. But, you know, those programs are pretty important to gardeners. Mike and I are both master gardeners, which are trained volunteers through the University of Illinois Extension. The extension provides
a lot. So don't try this at home. We are trained volunteers.
We are trained volunteers. Yeah. They provide a lot of volunteers to community gardens, to all kinds of greening and environmental projects. They also provide a lot of information to the gardeners on their website. They provide a lot of training to the horticulture industry. It's really one of those kind of secret, but really not secret,
no, it's just
relatively unknown
kind of
taken for granted agencies that really does a lot of good.
Let's put it this way: for people who don't know what Extension is, there's two things I would say. Master Gardeners, 4-H. That's
Master
what people...
Gardeners, 4-H. The basic goal of it is to take the knowledge, the scientific knowledge from the University of Illinois, and get it out into the community. And a lot of that is done for agriculture and for horticulture. But I wrote a blog post about this. It's on my blog, growinginchicago.com.
Which you can link to from my website as well, because I put Beth's blog link up on my website.
And that's mikenovak.net.
N-O-W-A.
Novak with a W.
Right.
And
go to this week's show.
The So there is a list of the public meetings that are going to be held, and people will have an opportunity to go to these meetings and make it clear to the extension what they value, what the priorities are for them, and hopefully have some influence on this planning process for this big reorganization. And I would just, you know, I'd urge gardeners to be aware of that and to think about that and to be aware of this issue as it develops over the coming months. There is no meeting in Chicago. The meeting for Cook County is the one that's in Countryside on March 12th.
And probably what's going to happen is that places other than Cook County will get cut back.
Cook County... Everything's
going to get cut back.
What they're really looking at is consolidating some of the offices. At this point, every single county in Illinois has its own extension office. And one of the big ideas that's on the table is the idea of combining two or three counties into a single office. We don't know how much that would affect the Chicago metropolitan area, but it's really important for the extension to hear from people about what programs they value and what their priorities are and how they want the extension to serve the public.
And I don't know how extension gets better well known throughout the state. I get the feeling sometimes that the people downstate have a better sense of what extension is than people in and around Chicago.
Well, it basically started out as a service for farmers. And yeah. People in agriculture, you know, they're growing corn, they're growing soybeans. They really depend on the extension for a lot of information and for a lot of support downstate. People up in the Chicago metropolitan area, they tend to think, oh, you know, if they've heard of it at all, it has something to do with farmers, and that doesn't have anything to do with us. But actually, the programs of the extension in the Chicago metropolitan area are bigger and busier and more complicated and much more varied than anywhere else in the state. So we really do have a stake in this.
Yeah. For the money that goes to extension, the services, this is one of the best uses of state money anywhere. So if you have the inclination, let your representatives know that extension deserves to have some money. We were going to talk about seeds. We never got around to that, really. But, you know, I'm going to do that real soon because I know that this is seed starting time. But I did put a link on my webpage to a book that costs you $3.95 if you go to the link that I put there. It's called Starting Seeds Indoors. And it's got everything you need to know, this little tiny book about starting seeds, and including different varieties and how you take care of them, whether they need warmth, whether they need coolness, whether they need light, whether they need darkness, the whole ball of wax. So, but I'm going to talk about seed starting on the program in depth soon. I wanted to do a shout out to, I was MC for the 5th annual Elizabeth I. Benson Award that went to Ken Dunn on Wednesday at the Wellington Avenue United Church of Christ. It was really a great event and very, very uplifting. One of the people who talked to me was Sarah Batka, who's a master gardener and listens to the show. Hey, Sarah! She actually quoted stuff I'd said on the show. That's really scary.
Who day, Sarah? Who day? Is that what they say?
Yeah.
Is that a shout-out?
I guess so.
Okay.
I have no idea. Ellis View Cooperative Garden, she's part of that, and it's a community garden she's very proud of, and I became a fan on Facebook of the Ellis View Cooperative Garden, so there you go. So, hi, you guys out there. Sarah, I forgot your friend's name. I have yours here because you wrote to me. I appreciate it. Greg Alexander, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me, Mike. I had a fun time.
Awake with Jake, Saturdays, 7 to 11.
That's right.
Right here on WCPT. Beth Botch, you're going to be back on the show real soon.
I guess.
I think we're going to talk about that when we get off the air. All right, Mighty House is next. Tune in next week for this show, the Mike Novak Show. I appreciate it.